This is Conor Lennon from UN News. Now, as I make my way to and from UN headquarters in New York every day, it seems to me there are more and more smoke shops on every street. In other words, stores selling cannabis, which is now legal in New York. For those of us in the city, it may seem that recreational drugs are becoming mainstream and accepted, but the picture does vary dramatically across the world. On June 26, the UN Office on Drugs and Crime released its annual World Drugs Report, which includes information on the impact of cannabis legislation. Let's do that again. I'll go from the top. This is Conor Lennon from UN News. Now, as I make my way to and from UN headquarters in New York, it seems to me there are more and more smoke shops on pretty much every street I see. In other words, stores selling cannabis, which is now legal in New York. For those of us in the city, it may seem that recreational drugs are becoming mainstream and accepted, but the picture varies dramatically across the world. On the 26th of June, the UN Office on Drugs and Crime released its annual World Drugs Report, which includes information on the impact of cannabis legalization, as well as, in some cases, pushback. The study also shows a surge in demand for cocaine and advocates an approach to drug use that lays an emphasis on human rights. Angela Mee is the head of social affairs at the Office on Drugs and Crime, and she joins me from the Vienna offices of the United Nations. Hello, Angela.
Hello. Hi, from Vienna.
Now, Angela, like I was saying, from the perspective of someone living in New York City, as I do, cannabis products are everywhere. What does the report have to say about the impacts of legalization?
So the report looks at the different impact that we see where cannabis has been legalized. So in some part of the United States, in Canada, in Uruguay, and also in some other parts like Thailand. The data remains very, a lot of gaps in terms of data and to really to understand. And it is important always to remember that the impact is very context specific. So what is happening now in the United States may be very different on what will happen if, the cannabis is legalized somewhere else. But what we see in the United States and Canada is particularly that legalization has increased the harmful use of cannabis. So not much in terms of the number of people or the percentage of people that use the drugs in general, as we call annual prevalence, but we have more people that use it more frequently. And also, particularly in the United States and Canada, with the way how cannabis has been legalized, the market is open to commercial interests that have brought also a lot of very potent substances. And so there are items or cannabis that can be brought today in the United... I'm sorry. I didn't... Okay, so we start again. Sorry.
Okay, let's go back to... Yeah, well, let's go to the top of the question. So it was... Yeah, what does the report have to say about the impacts of legalization? Just go when you're ready.
Okay. So... The report looks at the impact of legalization in the jurisdiction where this happened, particularly in the United States and Canada, Uruguay, but cannabis has been also legalized in different forms also in some other countries outside the Americas. But where really we have most of the data is only basically from the United States and Canada, not even from the United States for certain states. So what is clear in the North America is that the cannabis legalization has brought more harmful use of a substance. So there has been some increase on the percentage of young people and of adult population using drugs, but this is not very significant and actually is an increase that was happening even before the cannabis was legalized.
So when you talk about harmful use, would you mean that you're seeing the health impacts? You're seeing more people going to hospital or clinics with drug-related issues?
Yes, more hospitalization. And also some studies now are emerging showing also more mental health issues relating to attempted suicide or psychosis, this kind of mental health implications.
And so you're taking that, you are really seeing a causal link there. You're linking the legalization, the prevalence to these health impacts.
From a research perspective, there's never a definitive correlation or causation that you can derive from the data. And probably the real, if you want, scientific impact, we will understand it only in the long term. But what seems to emerge is that the cannabis legalization accelerated some of the trends that were there before on the use of cannabis in North America.
And there's also been pushback. You mentioned Oregon, British Columbia as two examples. Do we know why that pushback took place?
Well, the public statements that have been done in the context, as you said, of Oregon and British Columbia is basically seen as the change in the policy that applied, for example, in Oregon was not the legalization of drugs, but it was more the decriminalization. So instead of arresting people who use drugs, bring them having a system that they go to treatment, or that they just pay an administrative fine. And what has happened in Oregon is that there has not been, if you want, clear in a very short time since the new policy came, a real change. And so the overdose deaths continue to increase, but even if they continue to increase all around Oregon, in all the United States. But so in a way, it's probably a response to the frustration of not seeing the quick wins that everybody was expected. There are different reasons, and that's the Oregon is an example where it's important to understand how drug policies impact is really very context specific. And because basically the new so-called progressive Oregon policy a few years back was not very different from policies that are very current in Europe, for example, where and in Europe you don't have the level of overdoses or the level of also of use in public spaces, etc., that you've seen in Oregon. So it's always hard to draw conclusion and firm conclusion from very specific context where certain things may work or may not work.
That's interesting because the advocates of legalization often say that one of the benefits is that it will massively reduce the backlog of cases in the criminal justice system, because when you have strict laws, you have many people who are criminalized for just handling a small piece of cannabis or small quantity of drugs. But what you're saying is that, again, there's not a strict correlation between legalization and the criminal justice system. It's very, very region specific. Is that right?
Yes, I mean, in North America, for example, it's true that where cannabis was legalized, the rate of arrest for cannabis went down. But it's interesting also to note that in those arrests, the racial disparities that many wanted to eliminate with the cannabis legalization didn't really happen. And so the idea here is that cannabis legalization is not black and white, and the impact is not always either only positive or either only negative. And so it's important to understand the nuances. It is important to understand that, there is always an element of benefits that you can get, but also a lot of cost that you have to absorb. And so ultimately, is the balance that the international drug conventions talk about. The international drug control is all the fundamental of the international drug control is really this idea of balancing the use of the drugs for scientific and medical purposes, while avoiding that the drugs can actually undermine the health. So to ensure that the drugs are not are controlled in a way that they can protect the public health. Because as we know, those the drugs that are controlled have very important health consequences when they are used particularly often.
And another controlled substance, cocaine, has seen a big rise. Also, synthetic drugs such as meth. What reasons does the report pull out for this rise?
Well, there are kind of different reasons for cocaine and for methamphetamine. I mean, on cocaine, what we have seen is that the market has suddenly changed, let's see, about 10 years ago. Some of the dynamics of the cocaine market changed both the supply and the demand. So it started particularly with the change in the criminal landscape in Europe. And so if before there was almost the monopoly of the Italian groups. This monopoly was kind of broken by new groups entering the market, particularly from the Balkan area. And these groups have started to reach directly and gain the trust that the Italians had with the Mexicans, with the Colombians for the cocaine. And then they started to compete more. And so with more competition, the price went down. And that's started to trigger more availability in Europe. And so little by little in Europe, the demand started to increase. On the side of the supply, there has been the peace process with the FARC. And that the peace process has changed also from that side the way how groups operated. And then a lot more groups enter into the Colombian market, also foreign groups. And there has been a trend toward industrialization of the production of cocaine. And so we saw that even from the same land, traffickers being able to exploit more and to produce more cocaine. So these dynamics reinforce each other. And so with more demand calling in Europe and then more supply coming, and then that's now where we are in this kind of vicious cycle where there is more supply calling from giving more demand and demand calling from more supply.
That's really interesting. The law of unintended consequences, huge work's gone into bringing peace to Colombia. And ironically, that's led to this industrialization, you say, of controlled drug production.
Well, as we saw, causalization is always difficult to prove, and the way how the cocaine market has changed so massively and so fast, knowing whether it would have happened also with the FARC or not, that is something that it would be difficult to assess.
Sure,
and
point
to say.
Taken. But as you say, we can't prove the causality, but
no,
these two
and
events.
I think what is important to notice here is that also there is also an increase in demand. And so, again, one
sure.
call for each other, one alone would not have been sufficient. Because if you have more production and then there is not really an increase in demand, little by little this more production, come back and vice versa. So it's really a combination that made this kind of a perfect storm.
It's incredibly complex. Does the United Nations have a stated opinion on the use of recreational drugs? And what I mean by that is the UN saying that people shouldn't be using controlled substances at all, or is it more neutral on that stance? What is the opinion of the UN?
Well, the opinion of the UN is based on the international conventions, and that is, again, the objective and always the ultimate goal also of the UN is to protect the health of the citizens, of the people. And so recreational use means non-medical use of certain substances. And so non-medical use means using the substances in a way that can be harmful. And it's like any drug. When we feel sick, we go to the doctor, and then because we want to take a prescription, we want to take pharmaceuticals to benefit of our health, and so on. That's why we have a medical use, so a doctor that can tell us this is all good for you and this is bad for you. So recreational use, in a way, and non-medical use is, if you want, a dangerous use of drugs. But and science is very clear that the recreational, if you want, the non-medical use even of cannabis, cocaine, heroin, all of those, if you want, traditional drugs, are harmful. And, you see, if you have a scan of the brain, particularly of young people that frequently use cannabis, for example, you see clearly the difference and the impact. And that is particularly important to think for the young people, because it's when they are developing the brain. We know now that the brain develops until 25. And so everything that is taken, being cannabis also, but also by other substances, clearly damage that this development process. And it's something that a person will have for the rest of his or her life.
And aside from the health impacts that you just mentioned, the legal aspects, the rights aspects, the human rights aspects, this because there are huge implications for human rights in the drug production industry, if you will.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the if you want, helping countries to maintain this international regulation with the objective, again, to protect the health and at the same time ensuring that the controlled drugs are available when they are needed, so that the morphine is available for those that, to control pain, etc. In this context, clearly within the UN, is to use this thinking about protecting the human rights of all involved. And so those that require for medical use, so to make sure that they have the right and they can actually access the drugs that they need. On the other side, the people who use drugs, that the way how the state protect their health is in relation to providing services, so to providing health services in a way that their privacy, that their dignity, that they are not stigmatized, that they are not discriminated because of they are using drugs. So this in the context on a human right-based responses. And then there is from the side of the traffickers. And then there is the whole issue of how the criminal justice respond, again, respecting the human rights also of the perpetrators to ensure that they have fair trial, that there is not that the response is proportional. And so clearly, the approaching the drug problem and supporting the countries to address the drug problem through a human rights approach clearly includes, all of these aspects.
Well, so much to talk about, but we'll have to leave it there for now. Best thing to do is to read the report released on the 26th of June. It goes into regional specific elements of drugs, and you can find it quite easily on the UNODC, that's the UN Office on Drugs and Crime website, but we will, of course, also include a link in the show description. Angela Mee, thank you very much.
Thank you.